Good day. Welcome to Lager, episode number 4. Today we have another co-host, a special guest, Pekuja from Finland. Pekuja, introduce yourself.
Okay, so Pekuja from Finland, and I'm a student in Tampere. And, well, the reason I'm here is partly because I was coding a little game last week for the Pi Week competition. We'll talk about that later, but my Linux history is I've been using about 10 years or something. I've been programming for a bit longer than that, and these days I usually code in Python, and I'm running the Ubuntu Linux distribution on my desktop laptop.
How long have you been coding game? Actually, how long have you been coding under Linux?
Under Linux? Well, probably ever since I got into Linux, something about 10 years, but I haven't really done much interesting projects. You won't see my name in any big projects out there, so.
And what do you code in, aside from Python?
I do some C++ and Java, I guess. These days, I guess mostly Python.
Is that your profession? You are a software developer?
No, I'm a student.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not a professional, but I study computer science. So
one day you're going to be a professional software developer?
Yeah, most probably.
And you're going to write all closed code, right?
No, of course not. All free software. Well, if I can.
So now you're programming a game for PY Week. So we might as well kill two birds with one stone. Why don't you talk about your game and tell us exactly what PY Week is?
Okay, so PY Week or Pi Week is it's a little competition that's now running for the second time. And it's a competition where all the participants are challenged to write a game in using Python in exactly 1 week of time from scratch, and they can do it as an individual or in a team. And so that was the second Pi Week was last week. So from the it actually ended a week ago on Sunday at 00 hours GMT, and started a week before that, so was the 26th of March through to the 2nd of April. So there was about 70 participants there, and about 30 of them actually finished their games. And so my game is called The Trip on the Funny Boat, which is a little kind of a side-scrolling shooter game, which you play the role of a steamboat captain. And like all steamboat captains, you have cannons on board, and you fight pirates and sharks and dodge mines. So one thing about that is that the Pi Week has a theme that every game must adhere to. So this time the theme was Steam. Actually, it runs on Steam. Everybody got to kind of interpret that as they wished. So there were lots of games involving steam-powered robots. But anyways, our game was about a steamboat, which is a bit more traditional, I guess.
Now, I'm over on the Pi Week homepage. I'm looking at the front page. It lists the winners. Obviously, there's four categories, I believe. Overall, fun, innovation, and production.
Yeah, it's the Pi Week 1 page.
Yes, Pi Week 1. And I see they're not listed by games, but they're listed by developers. Is that it?
Yeah.
How do you see the, you know, looking at this, how do you see what games actually won? Or do you just, you click on it and, okay.
Yeah, you can. There's some screenshots of most of them and a download link.
Since these games are written in Python, they should work under any distribution, right?
Yeah. Most of them work pretty well, although there are some problems when, for example, when Windows developers don't care about letter cases, so it's not case-sensitive code. So that sort of thing causes some incompatibility.
But all the games are open source, correct?
Yeah.
So you can go in and change that.
yet. So it's not a big problem. So I think I got... at least most of the games running on my system. I had some problems with a few of them, I think.
And what is yours again?
It's the Trip on the Funny Boat.
Whose name is it under?
Pekuja.
And why am I not finding it?
Are you on the Pi Week 1 page or the Pi Week 2 page?
You know what? That's right. I thought I was actually on the home page, but it's by weeks. That's right. PiWeek.org. So if I click on PiWeek 1, and I'm thinking I click on the Pi Week home, I thought I was going back to the main page, but I'm not.
Oh, okay.
Ah, okay, I get it now. So now I'm on Pi Week 2. And, okay, so that the votes haven't been tallied yet or whatever, have they?
No. Currently, the voting is in process still. So next Sunday is the last day of the voting. Oh, actually, next Saturday is the last day of the voting. And I think they will announce the winners after that pretty soon. Yeah, I think it's on the same day because it's just calculate the winner and tell you the words, yeah.
Okay, so I'm on Pi Week 2. How do I find your game?
Click on Entry Listing on the left.
Okay.
And then scroll all the way down.
Okay. And
find it?
All the way. Oh, yeah, Trip on the Funny Boat.
Yep.
There we go. And that's going to work under... under Linux, right?
Yeah. You can need to have Pygame 1.7 installed. That's the current requirement, and a library called Numeric. But I think that's a dependency for Pygame in most distributions.
I'm trying to think. I think I have Pygame installed. So I'm definitely...
Yeah, which version, though?
Now you're going to make me fire up Pac-Man. Go ahead, tell us more about Pygame while I...
Say a bit about Pygame. So Pygame is a nice little... wrapper for the Simple Direct Media Layer, or SDL, which is, it's very nice, especially for simple games that don't use any 3D stuff or things like that, although you could use Pygame for stuff like input and sound, and then use OpenGL for graphics or something. It's not exactly a thin layer on SDL. They actually have some extra functionality, and it's kind of arranged better. It's mostly object-based and object-oriented and things like that, so it's kind of more Pythonic than the original SDL, which is, of course, just C code.
Okay, now which version of Py or Pygame do you say it needs?
1.7.
Okay, because I have 1.7.1-1.
Yeah, that should be okay.
I should... Now, let me ask you a question about you Python developers. How long have you been developing in Python?
I think for about 4 years or something.
Okay, and how tuned into the Python community are you?
How do you mean?
I mean, are you pretty well enmeshed or pretty well familiar with the Python community?
I'm not an important person in the Python community, so it's...
No, I'm not worried about
I'm
you
just
being...
One.
You are now an important person in the Python community because you're on this show. But what I mean is, a lot of stuff that I go out there, especially a lot of new stuff, and a lot of really cool stuff that I see that's being done in Python, or, you know, Python with wrappers from other languages, I see it's always using, like, the latest developmental stuff from Python, or the latest developmental stuff from other languages or tool sets, and if I want to use some of this stuff, I gotta like none of the distributions I've ever tried have the latest versions by default in their repository, unless you're running some ultra bleeding edge distribution. Why is that?
I think it's mostly because the development of kind of the Python wrappers and such, it's kind of in its baby shoes, so to speak. So it's not... it's all kind of new, I think. A lot of the stuff isn't really finished. I guess the development versions are pretty much the ones that do all the things that people need. So actually, I noticed by accident that the Pygame version I was using, it's pretty new, actually. It's not even in the stable version of Ubuntu yet. So it was actually, I was using the unstable version of Ubuntu. Okay. So I didn't even notice that I was using some functionality of the of PyGen that wasn't in the version 1.6, which is what is shipped with the current stable version.
Now, your game, or a lot of these games, are these something that people could just download, extract, and run? Or do they actually have to compile them in order to run them?
Well, it's Python, so it's interpreted, so mostly you can just kind of unpack the package and run it right away.
And that's just usually unpack the package, go into the directory, and type Python, and then the name of the application?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay. Does yours have sound?
Yeah, it has sound. It has some sound effects, and it also has music made by my friend Jay Druid.
So I'm looking at the screenshot you have here for it, and it looks pretty damn cool. And I almost have it, and I'm definitely going to try this thing out. I don't know if I should try it out now, because it might interfere with the audio. No, actually, it should. Oh, I don't know. I don't
just
know.
Did.
You just did.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. It's fun. And all you have to do is extract it and run funnyboat.sh.
Or you can run the funnyboat.sh script.
So it's a great game. Good job.
Thanks.
And
also, I'll have to mention that I didn't do most of the graphics. Most of the graphics are done by my friend Akito.
Whoa.
So props to him.
Okay, you know what? I just started this thing up, and right off the bat, the music... you guys wouldn't have heard the music, but I think it went on the actual... it's going to actually end up being on the show. And
no, I don't think we heard it. Oh, you mean...
You guys won't have heard it, but I believe it would have recorded over here on the other machine. And okay, first off, the about 2 seconds of music I heard, I said to myself, wow... That's pretty nice, and if the 2 seconds of music I've heard are any indication of how the game's going to run, I'm really excited to try this when we're finished here. Now, who did you say did the music?
Jay Druid.
Okay.
That's J-D-R-U-I-D.
And who did the graphics?
Hectigo. That's H-E-C-T-I-G-O.
And... okay, so you got the music and the graphics. How many people actually worked on this?
Just us three.
Just you three?
Yeah.
And you did this all in a week?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you have to see the other entries, too. They are pretty good.
Yeah, you know what? This is some really great stuff, I think, here. This PY week. And, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking to myself... The number of entries, and I'm sure, like, the worst entry in here is still going to be damn fun, right? and by worst, I mean the one that didn't win, you know, the one, if they had to categorize them or rank them all, the one that would probably score the lowest is still probably going to be pretty damn fun. And I'm sitting here thinking, the first week, how many entries were there? Do you know offhand?
I'm not sure, but I think... there were less participants, I'm going to say 40 participants, and perhaps 20 finished, or something like that.
So you got, let's just say 20 from the first week, and the second week is now closed, right?
Yeah.
And how do you know offhand how many participants finished on the second week? Would you say about...
I think it's about 33.
33?
Yeah.
So you're talking... we're looking at here 55 more games, potentially 55, provided they all run, you know, they all run well on the distributions, and you're able to get the required Python dependencies. But I mean,
that's
this
pretty good.
You're damn right, that's pretty good. And do they have any other projects like this? Like the PY Week one, the game thing is great. But I'm sitting here thinking to myself, man, you know what? What if people put this kind of energy also into, like, educational applications And you did like a PY week for educational applications too. I mean, this would be phenomenal. I mean, this type of project. And you could get some really good stuff out of here.
That's a pretty good idea, actually.
I mean, that's...
I think.
Now, your game, Trip on the Funny Boat.
Yep.
Once you're done with this, okay, you guys created this. What are you going to do with it now?
Well, I'm currently planning on kind of making some more enemies and more levels for the game, I think.
So you're not just going to say, here's our game for that week, and then... I'm sure it'd be cool to just let it out there as it is, but you are going to continue to update it?
Yeah, that's the plan. Although, don't hold me responsible if I don't.
So, we'll personally hold you responsible for that.
Oh, no.
So,
well, that's the plan anyways. So, I do have an interest in improving the game.
So who came up with the idea?
I did. I actually started this game on my own. I mean the Pi Week idea. Or the game.
Wait, you started the Pi Week idea of the game? Or you started Pi Week?
No, I didn't start Pi Week.
Okay.
Pi Week is by a chap called Richard... Oh, sorry. It's... Richard... Richard from Australia. I don't remember his last name. Well, anyways, guy called Richard. I think it's somewhere in here, but I can't seem to find it right now. But that's a guy who runs Pi Week, and. Yeah, Richard Jones.
Okay.
So he's an Australian who basically runs Pi Week on his own. He actually said that one of the reasons he runs it so that he'll have a week when he has to do a project, kind of. So he kind of gets off his ass and does a game for that week.
Now,
that's one of the reasons he likes to run it.
Now, this isn't a second week. Well, how much time between weeks is given? I mean, when they say, PY week one, PY week two, this didn't start 2 weeks ago, did it?
Well, the first PY week was about 6 months ago, I think.
Okay.
So, and that's, they're all separate competitions. So, the first one had already has winners, and so that was in, I think it was in October. And anyways, I think Richard is planning a third Pi Week in about 6 months. So of course, it's not a weekly thing, so there's, or even a monthly thing.
So we're looking maybe like two a year.
Yeah.
Now how
at least for now.
And I don't know if you have an answer for this, but how do you know somebody did this in a week and didn't say, well, hey, you know, here we got this Pi Week thing going on. Let's start making a game now. When Pi Week 3 comes along, we're in.
Yeah, well, that's a tough question, I guess.
Or is that just an honor system?
I guess it's mostly an honor system. But I guess people would get suspicious if the game was, like, huge, some MMORPG. And
like, if somebody, like, wrote, I don't know, Quake 4 in Python in a week, you'd be suspicious.
Yeah. So basically, I don't think there's anything we can prevent if somebody kind of does a week and a half, starts early. But actually, one thing that does prevent that people from making the game in advance is that the theme of the competition is announced on the at the moment the competition starts. So in the first Pi week, they had a theme that was power, and in the second week it was it runs on Steam.
Okay.
So the participants got to vote on those themes before the competition, but there was like five options. So basically, you would have had to either incorporate five different themes in your game, or make five different games if you wanted to cheat that way.
Wow. So now, judging, is that based upon the, like the Pi Week game committee, or is it based upon, like, you know, people go out and play these games and vote?
Yeah, it's voting. So all the participants who entered, they get to vote. So so basically I got to vote for all the games, so I give them a grade on three different categories, which are fun, innovation, and production. Production means like if it has good graphics and sound, such like that. So
okay, so the people who develop the games also vote, and there's got to be other people that vote, right?
I don't think there are. It's just the people who made the games.
So what happens if everybody votes for their own stuff?
No, they can't do that.
Oh, you can't vote for your own.
Yeah. It's you vote separately for each game, so you give it kind of ratings. So you don't vote that this is the best game. You vote that, okay, this game was fun and innovative, but didn't have so good graphics or something like that. And then all that is kind of, they calculate the averages, and whoever gets the best rating on average is the winner.
Let me ask you a question about tripping on the funny boat. No, it's trip on the funny
okay.
boat. Developing this game, what did you do the graphics in?
Okay, well, I did some kind of initial graphics in the GIMP, but Hektiko, who did the final graphics, unfortunately did them in Photoshop.
Okay. So you did these things in Photo... And now, why... Like, why Photoshop and the GIMP? Because those are image manipulation programs. Why didn't you use, like, a vector drawing application?
Well, I guess we could have used a vector drawing application, although I think Hektiko is a bit better with the kind of image manipulation stuff. I'm not sure it's... you should ask him about that, not me. But... I guess it was just kind of easy to work with some small sprite stuff. So I guess vector graphics would have been a bit more flexible, so you could scale it and stuff.
Well, I guess I don't necessarily mean vector graphics, but now I've tried using GIMP to draw some images, and to me it's a bit more of a pain in the butt than to use something like Inkscape. Or, you know, on the non-free side, Adobe Illustrator, to actually draw, like a drawing-type application.
Yeah, well...
I think that engines are more suited for bitmaps right now, and...
Yeah, that's right. It's a lot easier to make a game with bitmap graphics, but I guess you could just kind of pre-render the vector graphics, too.
Well, yeah, no, I wasn't talking about the final result, because, yeah, you can take any of those images that you make in those applications and convert them into PNG files or whatever, bitmaps or whatever that you're using. I was just wondering why, like, a photo manipulation application for actually drawing these images. You drew these images, right?
Yeah, well, Hektiko drew these.
It just seems... Now, did he actually draw them in the application, or did he, like, draw them out on, like... draw them out and scan them in.
I think he has a kind of a graphic tablet he draws with.
Okay.
A Wacom tablet or something like that.
All right. That's some really great stuff. And you know what? One of the things I'm thinking here, and I'm looking at this, and I'm like, you guys put together a game like this in a week. And in that week time, how many hours did you devote to this?
Well, I'm not exactly sure, but I'm going to guess 50 hours or perhaps more.
So you guys, now, that's 50 hours that you did, or are you talking like total?
That's how much I did, I think. I pretty much used all my free times.
So you got
to do this.
You got three guys, 1 week, using all their free time, and you produce a game like this.
Yeah.
And it runs cross-platform, and it looks like a hell of a lot of fun. And that's just amazing. It's amazing, and I hope we see more of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, this is nothing. There are competitions like Ludum Dare, which is a 48-hour competition. You write a game in 2 days.
And you what do you win, a free coffin when you're dead from doing that?
No, I don't think there are any prizes in that competition either. And that's not just for Linux or for Python. That's kind of a general game development competition. But some people do that. I haven't actually participated in that one. But I've seen the results, and some people have made pretty good games in just 2 days. That's an individual competition, though, so no teams.
You know what I'm thinking about here, and I'm looking at this, and this is interesting, and this is going to tie into our next topic. Is there anything else you want to say about Pi Week, or your game, or anything else before I move on to the next topic?
No, I don't think there's.
Okay, cool.
Important.
Because I'm looking at this and I'm saying to myself, what would be really, really, really cool is if, like, at the end of all this, they took all these games and they put them on a live distribution of Linux and they made it available for download. And people could just, like, pop these distributions in and they'd be able to sit down and play these games right out of the box, really simply. That would be really cool. And the reason why I bring something like that up, you know, doing it on a live distribution, which for Pi Week would be fantastic, and somebody out there in the community could go ahead and do that. I'm sure it wouldn't be that difficult with all the different live distributions out there right now. As a matter of fact, I can hear the gears turning in Devin's head, and he said that he's going to have one of these by the end of the week. Awesome, Devin. Awesome. Anyway, talking about the live distributions, I had the opportunity to be out at Linux World Expo and have a booth with the tech show out there and meet a whole lot of people. And one of the people that I met was a guy who lives about an hour north of me in Scranton named Eli Tomlinson. And he has a company called GameX. And it's at GameX.com. And what they're doing on GameX is they're trying to get hardware developers and game developers really interested in designing games on Linux and designing games that are using Linux as a platform specification for games. And I plan to have Eli come on and speak specifically about GameX on this show in the very near future. He's really interested in coming on. But I just wanted to bring that out, hit you guys up with the URL. And he was handing out two live distributions, gaming distributions that GameX has put together. Each one is each disc has one game on it, and that's all it does is run the game. One of the games was Super Tux, and the other was Neverball. And for a review of Super Tux, we did that on the first logger. But I'm just thinking right here, something like, you know, like a live GameX distribution with the games from Pi Week on there would be really cool. Really cool stuff. And, you know, not only that, I had said that to Eli, he was talking about getting hardware, you know, the push to get hardware manufacturers to certify their hardware for running, you know, Linux games, particularly giving like gaming certification. And I mentioned to them, you know, what about putting together, like, have you guys ever gone out to the store? Now, I don't know if they have these over in Finland, but you can buy, like, these little joysticks that you plug right into your TV that run essentially emulators for old, like, Atari games or ColecoVision or some old arcade games, and they have, like, three or four different games on there, and you just plug them right into your TV and you play. Do you have those over there in Finland?
Yeah, I think we do. Some special stores sell them, I think.
Yeah, and you know what I'm talking about, right, Devin?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, what about doing some of that for some of the Linux games? That would be pretty cool. And I'm thinking, this would be another idea with the PY Week games. All these little wonderful, fun little applications. They're just really great stuff.
You know, what they could do is they could make a live CD and then they could sell it. And then for the next PY Week, they could have the contest give away the money to the top winners, and then they could give away their revenue or some of it to there.
That's a pretty good idea. Generate a little cash prize and some money to help fund the whole project.
Yeah,
that could be cool. Although I don't know, perhaps it might kind of skew the competition when it's not about just having fun and making a game. It also has the money involved. I don't know.
I hear what you're saying there.
It could be a really good thing so that more people would participate and we would get tons and tons of good games.
Once they're created, are these games released under any specific software license?
I think the rules state that it has to be open source or free software. And I think it's not that strict for the kind of media for the games or the graphics and stuff, but the idea is to kind of do it in the spirit of open source and free software. So that code license has to be, I think it has to be something.
It has to be the what the Free Software Foundation complies as open source and free
on
their website.
So.
So any of those licenses are fine to use.
Yeah, so our game is under the GNU GPL. But I think that's the most common one too.
Alright, that's some great stuff, man. Great stuff, Kuya. And thumbs up to that. Devin, do you have anything you want to say before I talk about the GP2X?
Not really.
Okay.
It's a great application.
Yeah.
Great game.
And maybe next week we'll review it. Yeah. We'll talk about some of the other... I'd like to look at some of the other games that are on there, too. We've had a lot of requests, or actually a few requests, to talk about or to make sure that we bring up stuff about the GP2X, which is a handheld multimedia gaming device that's put out by Game Park Holding in the United States. I believe that's Game Park Holding is a distribution company. You can look at the website for the GP2X, which in my opinion is not the best website in the world, at gp2x.com. And the device itself is reminiscent of a Game Boy Advance. It's about the same size, almost has the same key layout for it. And it's a sweet little device, and I'll just give a quick review, an overview of what it actually does. And what it is, it's a handheld device that does video, audio, and gaming. Primarily video, audio, and gaming. And it also has an image viewer, so you can put like your photo albums and stuff on here. It has an e-book reader, which will allow you to read e-books. It takes two AA batteries, and let me specify those AA batteries. Should be at least 2,500 mAh rechargeable batteries. Now, here in the States, you can get those for a four-pack at Walmart for $9.99, and a charger will run you, depending on what kind of charger you get, another $10 on up to $30 if you get the rapid chargers. And so you definitely need to have rechargeables and running at that 2500 mAh, because anything less than that, it's just going to suck the life out of those batteries. If you just put standard AA's that you buy in there, you're only going to get about a half an hour of use out of them. Batteries won't be drained. They'll be about half drained. It's just not enough of a charge left to draw the power to actually use this device. And, of course, if you're using video, it's going to suck the life out of the batteries more. I think on a good day, I get about 5 to 6 hours of audio, constant audio play out of it, and probably about 3 hours of video, if I'm lucky, an hour to 3 hours. And in gameplay, I've played for about 3 hours to 4 hours, depending on the type of game I'm playing. So video support on this is very limited. You're looking at DivX or Xvid is what the playback is. So any video that you want, you have to actually convert into the file format that was acceptable for the GP2X. It's a very easy process if you have MNCoder. And I'll post a script on the show notes that I've been using, which I got off the GP32X forums. Really simple. And I've taken any video that I've been able to download on the and get into my machine, and that'll play through MPlayer, will also encode into the format acceptable by the GP2X. Now, do either one of you have a PlayStation Portable?
No, I have a Nintendo DS.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay. Now, PlayStation Portable, from what I understand, is kind of a similar process. It only accepts a certain range of certain types of video formats, so you actually have a tool to convert them. Look at it, this is the same way. The difference between the GP2X and the PSP conversion utilities is, you know, right now the only thing I've ever found was a script that I run, which I found on the forums, and you need MPlayer with MNCoder. So it's pretty simple. There is a TV out cable for this, and I think it was designed by Satan, because the TV out cable is awful. It works pretty good, but the downside to it is it's a female S video out cable, or I'm sorry, it's S video out, but it's a female composite jacks. So what you actually need is you're going to need, it's about a foot long, so you're actually going to need extension composite cables to go from the jacks on the TV out into the TV. You're also going to probably need an extended S-video cable so that you can plug it into your S-video port on your TV and get it in there. Once you're able to get that onto the television, it works pretty well. Some people have complained about the lines, there's being lines on the TV and all that. You're going to need to make sure that the connection to the GP2X is in there pretty well, because sometimes you'll get distortion or the color will be off or whatever, so you just need to make sure it's in there. So, and again, if you're going to be using it to play video, especially in the TV video out, you're probably going to want to get an AC adapter for this so that you can plug it into the wall instead of having to use batteries. And you could buy the adapter through Game Park Holding or one of the distributors for $30, but I found that you could just get a generic one that supports 3.3 volts at 1 amp and for about $10. The only thing you need to do is be careful that you have the right polarity on it, on the device. When you get one of these multi-use adapters, they usually come with a handful of devices, a handful of adapter plugs that you plug into it. Make sure you get the polarity right on that, because you don't want to damage your machine. People have reported that this thing is very fragile, particularly the headphone jacks, that they have a tendency to break when you stick headphones in there. And another thing I said about the polarity issue with the adapter, that people have bricked their system because of that. I've never had a problem. I've been a little rough on the headphone jack myself, and I've never had a problem with it yet. And I've actually dropped this thing a few times while I was running, which is not a good thing. But and I haven't trashed it at all. It comes with a screen cover, and you can buy another screen cover for it if that one should get damaged. Although I have no idea how, once you get this actual screen cover on, which is you peel off an adhesive tape on the back of it and you stick it right onto the device, I have no idea how you'd actually get the screen off without cracking the case or scratching up the case. So I don't know what the plan is for that, or or then maybe that's a design flaw in it. Now let's talk about some of the games that are actually available for this. When the GP2X came out about 6 months ago, there wasn't a whole lot of software for it. There was a huge emulator, huge choice of emulators out there, and talking about Game Boy emulators, Sega Genesis emulators, Dreamcast emulators, Neo Geo, Nintendo Entertainment System, and of course MAME. That seemed to be the biggest thing taking off on the GP2X. Now, the version of MAME that's available for it is an older version, and it only plays games, I think I read, something up to 1990, games that were released out in the arcade up until 1990. So you don't have a whole lot of choices out there. There's still, you know, a huge selection to choose from if you can find the ROMs, but don't expect all the ROMs to play. Anything after 1989 or 1990 won't. But there's still a bunch of choices out there that are really good. The NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System, the Genesis, they all seem to run pretty well. They've been under a lot of development, and most of them have sound working, and they run up to, you know, run pretty fast. And they're easy. They're easy to install if you read the directions. You definitely have to read the directions that come with the software that you want to try out, because some emulators that I've tried, and I think the Neo Geo is one of them, require that you place the ROMs in a certain directory on the flash card, or you place the emulator in a certain directory. So you need to be careful that if you're firing up your emulator or your application and it's not working, chances are you don't have it in the place where it has to be. I guess I should also say that this device takes SD flash cards up to at least 1 gig. Now, previous firmware versions, I'm running 1.4.0, which came out about 3 weeks ago. Previous firmware versions had trouble with larger cards like 2 gigs, certain vendor manufacturer 2 gig cards, but I think that's been rectified in the newer firmware versions. So I'm running both a 1 gig and a 512. I use the 1 gig for most of my podcast files and my games, and then the 512, I usually just drop music onto there. Anyway, aside from the emulator scene on this thing, there's a whole bunch of open source and free software games that have been ported and are in the process of being ported over to the GP2X that run really well. FreeDroid is an example. Some of the games that I really like to play on this thing, my kids really like to play a game called Fall Down, which all it is just this little Japanese character that falls from the sky, and then there's like bricks along the way, and you got to angle it so he falls through the holes in the bricks. If you get caught and it goes above the screen, you know, that's it. Your game's over. Another game which I really like to play and kill some time with is a game called Kobo Deluxe, which is a space game available for Linux and I think other distributions. But Kobo Deluxe, you have a ship that fires, you know, you just fly around firing. You're attacking these like space stations, and you have to hit these little round balls on the space stations to destroy them. So like a space station might have 10 round balls on it, and you got to fly around and hit all these balls to knock out the different parts on the space station until it gets down to the last one, and you hit that and you blow the space station up. It's a fun diversion, and will kill some time if you're on a plane or a car. There's a whole bunch of other games on there. Nebulous, which I don't really know how to describe Nebulous. It's kind of a console or a platformer. What you are is this little four-legged creature, and the only thing you could do is jump, and you could fire out, I think you could spit something out. And you're trying to climb this tower. And along the way, you have to go through different doors that pop you out in different places. There's creatures that bounce up and down or try to attack you. There's boulders that roll at you. It's a really hard game, and it's something definitely to check out. And probably the one I played the most on here is Sudoku, which is very addicting to me. Did you guys ever play Sudoku?
Is that Japanese one with the, like,
the numbers or the letters?
Yeah, and the squares and stuff?
Yes.
No, I haven't played it, really.
Have you played that, Pakuya? It's
yeah, I played it kind of on pen and paper.
Yes. I enjoy Sudoku. And playing it on here is pretty easy, and it's fun, too. So definitely worth checking out. My daughter absolutely loves the modded Super Mario Brothers game. So now it's... let me actually get the real name.
Gigana Sisters.
Huh?
Gigana Sisters.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you there.
Is it the Gigana Sisters?
No.
Okay, something else.
Yeah, let me actually pull it up so I can figure out what the name of it is. It is Super Mario Brothers Hack. It's just called Alice Cooper, where they've replaced, of course, Mario with Alice Cooper and some of the different enemies that you fight with, like a spider and snakes and other things. And you throw fireballs, and I don't know. It's a pretty interesting thing. I guess it's mainly because my daughter likes Super Mario Brothers, but it's pretty cool. And of course, if you're using any of the emulators, and do you guys use emulators?
Not really. I used to, but
A bit.
If you're using emulators, now we all know we're only using games that we've purchased in the past.
Yeah, of course.
Because that's the legal way of doing it. And now I've heard some people say you can use a ROM that you've never owned for up to a week, but then you must remove it from your system. But what's nice?
I hope that.
Yeah, what's nice about this is it's cool that I'm able to go out there and get all the old games that I used to have that I no longer can run on my systems because I don't have the system, and play all those things anywhere I go with this. So the emulator seems working pretty well. Music-wise on this, the music player is pretty standard run-of-the-mill music player. I think it's a version of M-Player. I play AUGs on it. I play MP3s. Now, I will say, most of the podcasts I listen to, if there's an AUG format, I will definitely use the AUG format. I've never had a problem with that. Now, I was burning or ripping a lot of my CDs to AUG format, and when I was putting them on this, on the older firmware version, and I haven't tried on a new one, what I was end up having was the AUG playback was a little weird, that it would start playing the file, but the time was all off, and when I set it to randomize and just go through the songs and randomly pick different ones and make a random playlist, it would get to the end of the song and that's it. It would stop. It wouldn't continue on to the next one like it would for a MP3 file. So I'm not sure if there's some wonkiness with the AUG playback or not. I haven't tried using it for the song files in a couple of weeks now. There's a whole bunch of other applications out there for it. If you go to gp32x.com, which is not affiliated with Game Park Holding, who puts these devices out. It's more of a fan-based site or a developer site. They have both the GP2X and the GP32, which is the previous version of this handheld device, which wasn't running Linux. They have both of those forums and software repositories out there for it. Really great stuff. I mean, you want to go to this page if you have a GP2X. You're going to want to hit this thing like maybe once or twice a week, because there's a whole lot of updates and new games out there all the time. Actually, I'm looking right now. There's a game called Sprint Race Release, which is supposed to be a track and field like racing game for the GP2X, and it's something that I'll probably be checking out after the show. There's forums on there about the best place to go for getting information about the GP2X and help with anything that you need. So it's definitely two thumbs up there. Probably the limitations I say with this device is it doesn't have network capability or Wi-Fi capability, which would be really cool if they incorporated that in a future release of this product. I heard that
is there any kind of multiplayer in it?
Not really. Multiplayer is, if you had a two-player game, you'd hand it to the next person. There's really no way to play multiplayer or hook this up with another device. That's about the limitation. It's really just a personal multimedia gaming device, not meant for multiplayer use. The TV out with the games hasn't really worked that well yet. They're trying to get that fixes for that. So the TV out, it's not easy to plug this thing into a TV and play the games. You're kind of limited to playing it on the device itself, on the screen. Screen isn't that bad. It's a little bigger than, I think, a Game Boy Advance screen. So, it's nice. if you're trying to read, there's a PDF viewer for this thing, but it's really slow, and trying to read PDFs on the PDF viewer is tough because the text is really small, and when you try and zoom into it, like I said, that PDF reader was really, really, really slow. Somebody made a terminal for it, S-Term, which works great, and this doesn't have a keyboard, so it has like a virtual keyboard at the bottom where you move using the joystick. You move through the letters, and you just press, I forget which button it is to press with the, pick the letter, which is, then you can type out your commands, like you can change directories, you can run the application. There's a command line MP3 player on there, so you can actually play a song using a command line MP3 player. Then you can go out and play a game, which you can turn the audio off and listen to the music you want to listen to while you're playing the game, which is pretty neat. And it has tab completion on there, which helps out there to make it easier to actually execute stuff or do commands that you do on a regular basis. So if you really wanted to, you can go in there and find a directory structure and make a script on your computer and just copy the script over and execute that from the command line or the S-term. One of the features that's really nice, and I don't know if this is in the latest version of the firmware, but I take this thing running with me, and it's kind of bulky, I'll admit, but when you're playing an audio file with the music player, the different buttons do different things, and of particular interest is that the top buttons, the left and right buttons on the top of the device, will actually move, you know, will change you to the next track, next audio file in the list, or the left button will move back to the next track. And it was a pain in the butt if I was running or if I was playing this thing and I got out of the car and bump one of these, it would start from where, you know, it would go off into the next track. But there's a way to turn that to kind of like shut the machine down or put it into a suspend mode and still hear the music coming out of it when you're on the music player, and that's if you hit the select button. It'll turn the screen off and disable all the buttons, which has been a godsend for not accidentally bumping this thing and going on to the next song. And again, I'm not sure. And it also saves the LCD, which is good, because you don't really need the LCD lit up and going while you're listening to an hour-long podcast.
How's the video playback? Like, what screen resolution is it?
Most of the videos I have, I believe, the format, hold on.
640 by 480?
I'm going to tell you that in just a second. What is that? Is it with 320 by 240? The screen itself is not really that big. So I believe I drop it down to 320 by 240.
How many frames per second does it get for, like, videos?
Let me see if it'll actually tell you. You know, I that's a good question offhand. I don't know. I think it's at least doing 24 to 32 frames per second. I don't notice any distortion.
Yeah.
So the videos play back like they do on my machine here, and there's no artifacts or no... None of that. It plays really great for me. Now, on the newest version, you could actually... you could leave it at normal for playback, but you could also, like, you can dumb down the CPU to say battery so that it would probably be at a lower frame rate, or you can overclock the CPU to play it at a faster frame rate. And for me, I've been playing them at normal, and I haven't noticed any artifacts or distortion or jitters on it. It's actually played pretty well, and I've played a 45-minute videos on here, and you know, no problems whatsoever. Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
So you can adjust the playback rate, but I've never had any problems. What is nice, though, about the video player is if you're playing a movie and you stop it, the next time you start the video player, it asks if you want to resume the movie, and it'll pick up right where you left off on the movie. Unfortunately, that feature is not available on the music player yet, which would be really nice. Because if you have to turn off the device when you're in the middle of a 30-minute podcast or whatever, when you turn it back on, you're gonna have, if you choose that audio file to play again, you can't just pick up where you left off. You have to actually fast-forward on it. And fast-forwarding is pretty simple because you just use the joystick. So, you know, all in all, the GP2X has its pros and cons. I really like it. For $200 is what I paid for mine, and that it was like $205 for shipping and handling. And you figure, tack on another $30 for getting a charger and some rechargeable batteries and possibly an AC adapter, and you're looking at $240 for a handheld gaming device that does audio, video, and e-book reading. It's pretty good. I really think it's really good. The only thing missing is network support or Wi-Fi support for multiplayer playing.
How much did you say that battery lasts for games?
It depends on what you're playing and how much power. I played The Legend of Zelda for about an hour and a half to 2 hours one night. And that was after I listened to some audio and watched a little bit of a video, and then my battery went, and I had to replace the battery. So I'm thinking, depending on what you're playing, anywhere from about an hour and a half to 2 hours to about 4 hours of battery life. Now, my daughter played the Super Mario Brothers for about an hour and a half, I think it was, and I was on the same set of batteries that I had been listening to audio for about 2 hours. So it lasts a minimum of an hour if you have the batteries I have, the 2500 mAh batteries. So you get, you know, a fair amount of life out of it.
So those are the rechargeable batteries?
Yeah, they're rechargeable. Now, usually, you know, my day, I'll I have four sets of rechargeable batteries, so I'll take two with me, and that'll last me the whole day. At work, I usually, you know, I start this thing up on my way into work. And when I get into work, I'll probably pause it and go in there and start it back up again. And about lunchtime, about 4 hours in, is when I have to replace the batteries, 4 to 6 hours in. And then they usually last me until the end of the night. About the end of the night. And then I just stick them in my charger, and I take the other two, and, you know, the next day I'm good to go. I take those other two that were already charged, and about 9 hours later, because I don't have a rapid charger, the batteries I used the previous day are all charged up.
Now, isn't the firmware running Linux?
Yes, it is. It is Linux. It is a device running Linux. Initially, the developers were not releasing the source code like they should have been. And in fact, I think they were releasing it more on their forum, and it was a pain in the ass to get. But now, you know, it's really easy to get if you go to the GP 32X website I talked about. They have all the source code available up there. It's easier to get there from the actual manufacturer's website. They had some issues about a month and a half ago with people trying to download the source code on non-Windows operating systems, because their website design was just kind of bad, I thought, and they're running their server on IIS, whoever's hosting the Game Park Holding website. Running on IIS, and it was making it really hard to download the files on there for any other operating system other than Windows. So that's a thumbs down, but, you know, you can get the source code from the GP32X website, which is a lot better.
Yeah. You
guys have any other questions about this device?
Nope.
Do you do your own development on it?
I don't develop.
Okay.
I just use. I mean, about the only thing I develop in is some PHP and, you know, primarily PHP. Getting into some Perl. And I, you know, every time I sit down and try and learn C, I just get distracted after about a couple weeks, and I just don't go back to it.
Yeah. Which, so I was thinking, that's probably one of the best kind of portable devices if you want to code.
What's that, the GPL?
I know, the GP2X.
Oh.
It's probably a very good device if you want to do your own software.
Yeah, well, I mean, the if you want to develop software for it, the nice thing about it is what you develop on here is going to run easily under Linux.
Yeah.
Or should run easily under Linux. Without any problems. There hasn't been a lot, or I don't think there hasn't been any commercial games released for this. Now, the GP32, which is a version before the GP2X, or the GPX2, I don't know what the hell they're calling it. This one says GP2X, but on the website I see GPX2, and then I see GP2X, so it's not consistent as what they're calling it on the GP32X or GP32X website. Anyway, there's a lot of commercial games for the GP32. They're like games from $20 to $30, but those same developers haven't produced anything for the GP2X.
I think Game Park did a bit of a splitting of the GP32. Actually, they have another portable system that's called the XGP. I think. That's for commercial games.
XG. Let's check that out. They're Extreme Game Player. Hi. You know what? All right. Now, see, I'm looking at the specs here on the GP32X website, and I'm seeing. XGP and GPX2, and those must be. Wait a minute. I'll have to double check on that for another episode, because I'm looking at this here and I see GP32, GPX2, GP2X, and XGP. And
I'm guessing that the GPX2 is just a typo. I think the XGP and GP2X are the current models. And I think the idea was that GP2X is more for kind of homebrew stuff and media player things, and the XGP would be for commercial games.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that's... Because, when you click on that to get the info about them, I click on the GP2X, it takes me kind of the same page that clicking on the XGP sends me. And on that page, I see XGP and then I see GPX2. Which is different than... I'm not sure if that's different than the GP2... No. But down underneath, I see it's a GP2X-F100.
There's a... joystick has some information on it. Is the one with the... it looks like you can swivel the screen around.
Where are you looking?
I sent you a link in IRC.
Let me get to that page. All right, anyway, as I look at that link, what I'm seeing here is it does a comparison of the XGP and the GP2X, and I see that the GP2X is running Linux. But they say under here, video movie playback, MP4, XVID, DivX, and WMV. I'm not sure where they're getting that from, and usually this site is pretty up-to-date, but I've only been able to play XVID and DivX. I'll have to look at whether maybe the newest firmware supported MP4 and WMV, but I have not seen that. Anyway, let me go to that page you're talking about. Well, right there on that page I'm looking at, Devin, that tells you the screen size is 320 by 240, which is what I said. The joystick thing that you're talking about. Okay. GP Game Park XGP. Yeah, that's not what I have right there. That is something completely different.
Is that what Picuya was talking about? The commercial one?
Yeah, that looks
I think
like
that's it.
Yeah, that looks like the commercial one. And I don't have one of those. I'm thinking that's a little more expensive. Now the OS is, I don't think that's Linux based. And they don't say anything, any information about Linux on there. Yeah, so about the big difference between those two, aside from the fact that it looks completely different and probably has a different kind of functionality to it, I'm also seeing that the XGP has a USB on the go, so it might be easier to connect USB devices with it. It looks like it has a number pad. Is that a number pad on it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's like part phone, part game machine. It says it's the bastard child of PSP and Sidekick.
Oh, so it's a phone device too.
Yeah.
Huh. I wonder how much that goes for.
I don't know.
But I don't think it runs Linux. Oh well. So it's definitely, you know, if you're interested at all in the GP2X, I don't think there's any other handheld gaming device out there that's, well, is the PSP Linux based?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think there's any other handheld gaming device like this out there for Linux, that's based on Linux, except for the Nokia, but it's not really, the Nokia is more for web browsing and playback of media, and it has Wi-Fi connectivity. I'm not sure how well it would be as a game playing device. Do either one of you have that Nokia handheld device?
I don't know.
Well, maybe you should get one and review it on the show there, Devin.
Maybe later.
There you go.
All right. Can't pay for that phone bill. So I have a track phone, so I don't use it, so whatever.
Let's roll on to some game reviews. We've had a suggestion, I don't know if it was emailed to us or it's on the forum, to keep an eye on GameTomb and maybe check out, make a reference when there's good new games on GameTomb or Tomb or updates or information in the Linux gaming community. So last night I was over on Linux GameTomb and checking out what was on the front page, and there was a couple applications on there that I saw and figured I'd take for a test drive and see how easy they were to get installed and how easy they were to run. And first up is XYE. XYE is... I don't know how to describe it. It's a port... it's similar to the SDL KYE, but has new objects and different things like that. How would I describe this game? Did you guys ever play Gnome Stones or anything like that?
What's that?
I think I might have.
Gnome Stones is a game where you're just a little guy and you tunnel through these, or you go through the levels, and some of them you have to tunnel through, and you have to collect all the gems in the.
So it's like Boulder Dash.
Not really.
I'm not sure. I haven't played Boulder Dash in a while.
Have you ever played Six Feet Under? It's like a really old game. Ever played that?
No, I haven't played 6 Feet Under.
It's kind of like that.
Well, anyway, the basic concept of this game is you have to collect all the stones in each room, and there's different obstacles you need to get around. Like, there's blocks that you have to push that you can only push in one direction. There's blocks that'll drop down on you if you move something underneath them. And, you either get crushed or boxed in, or they'll box in gems that you need to pick up. So the object is to pick up all the gems in this one room. It's XYE. I'll put the web page on the website. It was easy to install. I had to compile it. I didn't have a version available in the Arch repositories. I'm not sure how available it is for other distributions. It's still under a lot of development, I think. It only had, like, 10 levels. That's something to check out. Graphics were not spectacular, I'll say. In fact, there was times when I was playing around on this game and I couldn't figure out what was a gem and what was a block, so I didn't know I had to actually pick some stuff up. So it was a little different there. But I give it kudos for being really easy to install and get up and running with. The next game I tried out was Solar Conquest, and from the front page of the Linux GameTomb and the graphic or the screenshot they had, it looked like, a really spectacular space game. They had this huge explosion going on. And when I actually got it, I couldn't believe how fast it downloaded, and I thought there was a mistake there and it was a corrupted download. Because the file itself, which you download, I think is only a couple hundred kilobytes. What was infuriating about it was if I went to the Solar Conquest webpage, I really couldn't find Solar Conquest download on there. There was a couple applications they have, a couple games they have, online games, Space Flight and Solar War, but I had a hard time finding Solar Conquest. But from the Linux GameTomb site, there was a direct link to the download for Solar Conquest. It downloaded really fast. I believe it is a... Hold on. I'm not sure what it's written in. Maybe it's SDL. I think it's SDL. Anyway, yeah, it's an SDL-based game. The compile for this thing was really fast. All you had to do was just run make in that directory, and then you can run Solar Conquest right out of it. It's kind of a simple game. You are on a team of ships. I'm not sure if it's multiplayer, but you are part of a team of ships. You're the blue guys, I believe, and you got to fight the red guys. And essentially what you have to do is go around and blow up the red guy's gun turrets. It's fast-paced. There's not a lot of... I haven't seen a lot of variety in this thing yet. It reminds me a little bit of Kobo Deluxe, but it's fast-paced, and I thought the controls were really difficult, the default controls, because you use the mouse to rotate your ship in the fire, but you have to use, like, the W, A, S, and I think it's the Q keys to control the ship. When you run the application... What's nice is at the bottom of the screen, it tells you exactly what keys you're supposed to use. W and S keys move your ship forward and backward, and then the A and D keys move your ship sideways.
So it's like an FPS.
It's not really. It's a top-down shooter.
Yeah, but the controls are just...
It's kind of like an FPS, but I would have liked it better if they would have used, like... the up key and the down key for forward and back, and maybe left and right to move left and right, to move to the left or side, move right, move sideways right and left. And I'm looking on here and seeing if you can actually change the screen. I don't see about changing. There's an edit options, but I don't see about changing the key configuration, but that was annoying right out of the bat. But it was a fun little diversion, I think. Now the other games on there, Vulture and Megazoox, I didn't have any success with getting compiled, and I didn't spend a lot of time playing around with it. Vulture, what that is a graphical interface over NetHack. Have you guys played NetHack?
Yeah, I played a little bit.
Right, it's a graphical interface.
Not really.
Over NetHack. NetHack is a ASCII-based kind of dungeon hack game, dungeon hack and slash game, where you just go through and you fight monsters, you collect treasure, you collect magic weapons. I mean, you build the character in the beginning, and all it is just going through this dungeon and killing things. There's an older version. I think Vulture is like an extension of Falcon's Eye, which provided like a 3D isometric interface over top of NetHack. I didn't have any success compiling Vulture. There wasn't a package available for Arch yet. Maybe there's one available for Debian, I'm not sure. Vulture looks really nice, but you really have to sit there and read the instructions on how to get this damn thing installed. It's not an easy thing to do. So if you're not into compiling your old software, probably not something you want to check out. The other one was Megazoox. And what Megazoox is, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right, what Megazoox is a application, is a platform, or application development platform, or game development platform, a game creation system based on ASCII text-based games. And while it looks great, and it looks exciting and fun, and there's a ton of games out there that people have developed for it, and supposedly it's really easy to make games for it. Unfortunately, when I brought this application up, I didn't see any text. It looks like they made the text, or when it's running on my screen, the text is blue on blue. Because I can see that the interface is there, and I can see where text should be, but I see nothing. And I'm trying to figure out what the problem is with that. I spent about an hour on there trying to figure out. The forums on the Mega ZooX website didn't seem to have anything under there about that occurring. And I'm wondering, is it possible there's something up with the libraries I'm using on Arch? Maybe I should try it on a different distribution. But I wasn't successful in getting that running, unfortunately. So it's something I'll keep an eye on and maybe report back to you about. But today, when we decided to record the show, who was it that posted about Blob and Conquer?
I think I did.
You did. And, Devin, have you gotten that installed yet? Or compiled?
I fixed the one compile warning, and then when I run it, it gives me a bunch of errors. So
I think it actually compiled here. Yeah. I haven't tried it yet, though.
What Blob and Conquer is? Is another release from our buddies at Parallax. Was it Parallax Studios?
Yeah.
I think it's so.
And,
Or Parallel Reality.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Parallel Reality Studios. And it's the sequel to Blob Wars. And essentially it's a third-person 3D game where, again, you are a blob and going through and fighting other blobs and stuff. And it's still under a lot of development right now. They're still working on it. When I brought it up, it looks really cool. The controls are taking a lot to get used to, I think. And I only played it for about a minute or two before we started the show. The only problem I had with it, aside from the controls, was that I found it to be very, very, very dark and hard to see anything. Even though I boosted the brightness up as far as it would go, it was still everything was very dark on it. And it's something that, you know, I want to keep an eye on and play around with. I look forward to it. Any comments from either one of you guys? Get the game up and running.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. So, I think the controls are a little confusing.
Is it very
it's shooting where I don't know where it's supposed to be shooting at. I'm not hitting any of the bad guys yet.
Yeah, it's hard to control. Is it very dark for you?
It's quite dark, but the enemies are kind of quite colorful, so it's not that bad.
Yeah, it's easy to see the enemies, but I think the walls and the floor and any of the other textures that make up the background, it's really hard to see.
Yeah, especially in corners, you can't see anything. Like corners of the map, kind of.
At first I thought I was running around in a closet. With the door closed and the lights out, it was hard to see.
That would be an interesting game, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see how that develops. We'll keep an eye on that. And the last one I have for this week is Lin City NG, which I think is either for a new game or next generation. I'm not sure what it is. Did either one of you say you played Lin City?
I played it a while ago, but I don't really remember it that well.
Yeah, the old version of Lin City is kind of like Sim City, but it's not exactly SimCity. It was more of a tile-based game where you were laying tiles down, and it was like the real old SimCity style. Now, Lin City NG is now 3D, and you actually, you know, see different things get built up. You can see depth in it. It's got some more. It's the next generation, and I played it for a couple hours last week, and I really enjoyed it. If you're into that type of simulation game, it looks to be really fun. It was easy to get installed on my system. I had a package for it under Arch, and I'm sure there's packages for other distributions. You can download the source from the website, and I think you can download... Hold on, let me go to the website for it. You can download packages off of their website, too, for Debian, Gentoo, Mandriva. They tell you how to install it for SUSE. How to install it over there on all those different distributions. If you're into this kind of game, if you're into simulation games, definitely give this one a look over. I did not notice any hiccups on it. It's a little confusing if you're not into these kind of games or if you never really played it to get up and running. The help system, if you press the help button on the screen, it'll bring up documentation, which is a little on the short side, I think, right now. It gives you some idea of what you're supposed to do, but I played for about 45 minutes trying to figure out how to get my technology to go up before I realized that over on the left-hand upper left-hand corner of the screen are the different objects that you can put down and build. Like, you could put down a housing development, so you could put down a factory, stuff like that. It took me a while to realize that, you know, if I go over and I right-click on one of those objects, I bring up a whole list of different objects I can choose. So as I sat there trying to figure out how the hell I can get my technology up so I can start building up other kind of, like, factories or other kind of mining capabilities, other kind of roads to advance my city, it told me I had to build monuments to start out with, and I could not see monuments in that list of that initial list right there until I actually clicked on like what was I think it was the stores area, and it brought up a whole list of it extended another panel that came out horizontally, and I saw different items that I could build there, and monument was one of them. So when I dropped down a monument a few months later in game time, you know, my technology went up so I could build other things and build roads and stuff like that. So, you know, there are some quirks in the interface that aren't, unless you read the documentation or you're familiar with these games, you might not be aware of. It's fun, definitely. Definitely check it out. It's an improvement upon the original Lin City. And you can find that at lincity-ng.berlioz.de. With some of the other games that we reviewed, and the link will be on the website. Anything you guys want to bring up?
I think I tried that for a short time, and I also noticed that the UI was a bit confusing at first.
For Lin City?
I'm not sure, but I think it was a little bit clearer on the original Lin City. So maybe they're working on it.
Yeah, I played the original one, and I thought, you know, there are some differences with user interface and capabilities on this one that were a little harder to get into or a little more confusing than the original one.
Mm.
So, you know, the documentation you definitely, I think, have to read. And from reading the documentation that I read, the help system, I think there's some holes in it that make it a little harder for you to actually get into playing this. But maybe somebody who plays a lot of these type of simulation games, maybe that's, you know, they come with some pre-existing experience that makes it a lot easier for them to play.
Mm.
But it's impressive, I thought. Yeah. I thought it was pretty impressive. Graphics have come a long way on that.
Actually, did you know that it was a part of... have you heard of the Linux Game Tomb Game of the Month project?
The Linux Game Tomb Game of the Month project?
Yeah.
No, I don't think I have. And
That was kind of a... They had that on the Linux Game Tomb, so... it was kind of a project to improve upon old games... And Lin City was one of those. So it's basically the original idea is that they'll decide on a game, and then for a month they'll have all the people that come to the Linux Game Team forums. There are like tons of people that will attempt to improve the game during that 1 month. Although I think they all took more than 1 month. So it's more like game of the 3 months. But anyways, I think Lin City was the latest one they upgraded, kind of. And I think they did Super Tux and Tux Caught.
No.
So basically, the idea was just kind of to get a lot of people together to make an old game better.
Okay, now is that something where people offer suggestions, or they actually have developers contribute to making the game better? Or both?
There's kind of lots of contributors on there, so There's lots of developers on the game too forum, so they basically they make a proposal and people kind of sign up so that yeah I could kind of do some improvement on the network code on this one or something like that. Then they make a plan and basically work things out.
Yeah, you know what? It's not on the main Linux GameTune website. I'm not seeing that on there, but if you go to the forums, there is.
No. It's on the forums.
Yeah, there's a Game of the Month forum, and that's something that looks like we'll have to be checking out.
Yeah.
And I think somebody suggested, how about Game of the Quarter instead of Game of the Month?
Yeah.
I'm seeing
that's more accurate, I guess.
Yeah, I'm seeing that Lin City was Game of the Month for January.
Yeah.
And if...
It was January 2005.
Okay, because I was going to say, if that was January 2006, and they put out Lin City NG in about a month and a half, wow.
Mm.
But, yeah, and I know that they're working on a Super Tux milestone, too, which looks like it's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the Game of the Month project is involved in that, but they did the milestone one.
I see a proposal for Super Tux Milestone 2 on there.
Yeah, I know. But I think they're not doing it right now. It's just a proposal, I think.
Well,
but have you seen actually the old Super Tux?
Yeah, we reviewed that on the first episode.
Yeah, but the old Super Tux.
The original one.
Yeah.
The one I've been playing Super Tux off and on for about a couple years now. Yeah, I remember when it first came out, it was just one level.
Yeah, but originally the Game of the Month project kind of improved the graphics like immensely.
Yeah.
And all that stuff and made lots of levels for it.
Oh yeah, you know.
It's almost a different game now.
It's come a long way. It's a great game.
Yeah.
I like that one a lot. How do you know what the Game of the Month is?
I don't know. I'm not sure if they actually have one right now. It might have died off, but I hope it hasn't. But I'm not sure, but I think they might be working on Win still. But I'm not really sure.
Huh.
I hear there's the GOTM history list on the forum. So there you can see all the project that they did.
There's a sticky one, a second one. Game of the Month, Super Tux Pingus, Super Tux Card, Lin City. I don't see anything for 2006. Looks like January through June was Lin City of last year.
They're not really doing it right now, which is a shame. They did some good stuff, a good idea.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it'll pick it back up again.
Yeah. I'm not sure, but I think they're actually a lot of those people are actually working on the game called Windstill, which is kind of a 2D action adventure game, like perhaps Metroid or Flashback.
Where is Win?
Like this.
Is there a Windstill?
There's proposal Windstill Milestone 1 on the forums.
Yeah, I'm trying to find that. Is there a website for that? Oh, Jump and Shoot Game. There it is. Oh, it's at Berlioz.de again. And, wow. Yeah, it kind of looks like a Metroid-esque type game.
Yeah.
Have you played it?
No, I don't. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I think I did. It's not actually very far. I'm not sure, actually, but I think they have lots of the kind of back-end worked out. I should probably check it out again.
Yeah, the last thing I see on the news page is from June 2005. And that looks—it looks really cool. I hope they would continue developing on there. I don't know how far they're on. Maybe I'll check it out later on today.
That's kind of an unfortunate fate of a lot of kind of open source projects.
Yeah.
That they die out.
That's a bummer. Let's see what's, what's available on the download. Binary and source. Usable tech demo and a bit playable, one level, one type of enemy, and should give you an impression of how Windstill might look like. Yeah. Oh well. You can only hope. Maybe people hearing this would like be like, "Whoa, it'd be cool to have a kind of Metroid-esque game out there for Linux, and we'll contribute to developing this." Or maybe it'll recode it all in Python for one of the PY weeks.
Yeah, in 1 week. Yeah.
There you go.
I think perhaps that's a bit too hard. But I don't know. Maybe some crazy people will do that.
Yeah. Well, anything else you guys want to add to this show before we wrap it up?
I want to thank Pakuya for co-hosting tonight. I kind of saw him in the chat room and, like, a couple, like, 10 minutes before we started the show said, "Why don't you come on and join us?" So, you did a good job. So, thanks.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, thanks a lot for coming on. That Pi Week stuff is it's looking really fantastic. I look forward to trying out your game as soon as I close up here. And, maybe you can come back on again sometime if you're ever around. If you have more stuff you want to talk about, you're always welcome.
Maybe. Yeah, and check out the Pi Week results are coming, so in next Sunday. So
and
be sure to look out for that.
Yeah, good luck to you and your team and Trip on the Funny Boat. Good job. Hope you'll be submitting something for Pi Week 3.
Yeah, I'm looking forward for it.
I want to thank you, Pakuya, and I want to thank you, Devin, for being on with me this week. And you guys keep on gaming. That wraps up another episode of Logger. Thanks a lot for listening. This podcast is distributed under the Creative Commons for non-commercial use. Feel free to redistribute, broadcast, copy, share, do whatever you want with it. Tell your friends about Logger. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, send them to logger@thelinuxlink.net. Check out our webpage at thelinuxlink.net/logger. You can leave comments there. This is where you'll find our show notes. And we also have forums over there at thelinuxlink.net. And enjoy. Keep on gaming under Linux. The opening and closing theme is by James Underberg, called The Battle, with opening sound effects from Blob Wars. Thanks a lot.